This is KLLG LP 97.9 FM, Willits, California. And I'm still Greg Schindel, train singer, and we are now boarding the Bipolar Express. Chug off the hill, puffing and chugging, you know the engine will reach that summit and go down the other side. Whoopee! What a ride! Clickety clack, clickety clack, clickety clack, clickety clack, clickety clack. Woo! 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 What a ride! No, hello, train fans, and today, dog lovers. Gotta love a dog. Hey, love me, you love my dog, right? Well, today, Greg Schindel's taking a break. About time, too, what I say. And it's me. It's me. Ooh, boy, it's me, the train singer. And train singer gets to have the whole ride with you today on the BPE. So, now, oh, you feel like we've gone to the dogs? Well, we certainly have, and I'm going to make sure that you stay with the doggies today. Get your mind on something else, right?
Kitty cat?
No, not necessarily. Okay, in previous shows, I related the story of our local celebrity, Boomer Jack. Now, he was the Boomer Jack Northwestern Pacific Railroad dog from Lincoln Killian's book of the same name. Now, before reading his book and meeting Lincoln himself, I was unaware that, you know, dogs really had played any kind of a role in railroad history. And when I was aware of how many dogs for so many years have been part of the trains, well, whew, I was fortunate to come across a collection of, you got it, railroad dog stories in which dogs, not engineers or conductors, were the main characters. Now, this publication is from Railroad Avenue, Great Stories and Legends of American Railroading Doggies. So, railroading, actually. So, I want you to sit back now and relax and enjoy some stories of railroad dogs. But first, I'm going to sing just a little bit of our local railroad dog song, The Ballad of Boomer Jack. A Boomer Jack. Boomer Jack got his head out the cab, he was blowing back. Boomer Jack, woo, clickety-clack, a vagabond dog, that Boomer Jack. Now the Northwestern Pacific, the days of log and steam, Boomer Jack, that railroad dog, first rolled on the scene. And like those drifting train men, old Boomer earned his name. All the train folk that he met, no master did he claim. From Hannibal, Mendocino, through Sonoma to Marin. 14 years Jack roamed the rails, disembarking now and then. He'd visit friends along the way, all glad to take him in. He was no one's dog, but everybody's friend. Woo! Boomer Jack, got his head out the cab, his ears blowing back. Boomer Jack, woo! Clickety-clack. A vagabond dog, that Boomer Jack. Now, the Bipolar Express is full of dogs today on KLLG LP 97.9 FM.
Now, how does a dog get off a train?
Woof!
He disembarks.
Oh, yes, I know. I just have to tell these.
These are the only jokes I have about dogs. Remember that one, folks? What do you call a dog with no legs? It doesn't matter.
He's not coming.
Oh, great. Where do you find a dog with no legs? Right where you left him.
Oh, no, no. Take him for a walk. It's a real drag.
Okay, enough of that. I know. So, I would love to have another dog, but I have this old cat now.
Zanzibar. And it would break his little heart if I should get a dog while he's still alive. You know, he's the king.
So I'm not sure which president said it, but if you want to have a friend in Washington, D.C., get a dog. Oh, my goodness gracious. So let me, without further ado, here we go.
Railroad dogs. I can't even believe this. This is going to be great.
What have I done? Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, yes, I see what I've done. I have gone to the dogs. Ever since flange wheels began to roll on strap iron rails in the early 1800s, the dog has been Railroad Avenue's favorite pet. Judging from the dogs I've seen, I have talked with, and the men, and the letters I've received, there are thousands of mascots in and around depots, switch shanties, crew rooms, offices, signal towers, roundhouses, freight yards, warehouses, and repair shops on railroads all over North America. The average rail dog is a stray of doubtful antecedents who wanders into company property, is adopted by one man or a group of workers, and makes himself useful as well as companionable. A typical case was Jack. One hot summer evening, a bleeding, exhausted shepherd pup with sore fort pads, indicating that he had journeyed a long distance, dragged himself into the desert town of Peach Springs, Arizona. The Santa Fe station agent was there, A.M. Browning, bandaged the paws and named him Jack. It was nearly a month before the animal could walk normally again. Then the agent started teaching him tricks, and Jack responded quickly. And soon the dog was performing real service, besides chasing, occasional burros and horses from his master's yard. He retrieved order hoops. Now, the order hoop, as any railroad man can tell you, is a lightweight loop with a handle in the crotch of which tissue paper train orders are inserted. Now, the agent or telegraph operator delivers these orders to trains that do not stop at the station, but passing up the hoops to men on the train, one to the engine crew, another to the train crew. Now, if the train is a doubleheader, three sets of orders are needed. A station signal has warned the men in advance to reach out for these hoops, pretty much as a carousel rider's snatch at the brass ring. The train men then quickly remove the orders and throw back the empty hoops for the agent to pick up and use again. Now, a train rolling 40 or more miles an hour travels quite a distance before the hoops are tossed off. So you can readily figure that Jack saved his master many miles of hiking in a month's time. Well, eventually, Mr. Browning died, and his job was taken over by H.W. Hutchinson, and the bereft dog was given to a state policeman. But Jack had become a rail dog, and no rail dog is happy unless he is near the tracks. Well, let Mr. Hutchinson carry on the story from this point. The creature refused to stay with his new owner, Hutchin recalls. Every morning when I opened the station, I would find Jack waiting patiently to get in, and I'd have to put him out at his closing time. During the day, he retrieved train order hoops for me. He just could not get rid of a dog like that, so I decided to keep him. And sometimes, just for fun, I remained at my desk when I heard a train coming. Jack would run to the door, look out, then bounce back and grab a hoop by the handle, trying to remind me to deliver the flimsies. And if I still failed to go to work, Jack would put his forepaws on my desk and nuzzle my face. He always stood by expectantly when I passed up orders to the head, and as soon as both hoops had been picked up by the new crew, away he'd dart after them. Sometimes it took him as long as 30 minutes to find hoops that dropped in weeds, but he invariably brought them back. If one fell under a train and was broken, he's returned with the pieces, one or two at a time. Now, a small roll of newspapers would be tossed off by train number 8 each morning, and Jack would catch it, rarely missing, although the train did not slow up when the baggage man threw it. One day, Jack was so intent on catching the papers that he failed to notice a local approaching on the other track. He whirled to snatch the bundle and was hit a glancing blow by the journal box on the head car of the local. For days thereafter, he could barely walk, but insisted on trying to hobble after the hoops. On another occasion, a drag freight labored slowly up the grade. Jack had already brought in the head and hoop and was waiting to run back for the one at the rear. But instead of flipping off the hoop, the conductor sat on the caboose steps, reading in the order. Jack kept pace with the crummy, looking for the hoop. At length, tired of waiting and seeing the handle protruding several inches over the steps, he made a mighty leap and grabbed the hoop in triumph with his teeth. Well, the dog's reputation spread far and wide. Twice, a Hollywood scout stopped off at my depot and offered me a good price for Jack, whom he wanted to take back to the movie capital, but I said no. Separation from the railroad would have broken Jack's heart. Finally, there came a time when Jack limped home to the station with a bullet wound in his side, and he died almost immediately. Many of us missed him. And to this day, railroaders working out of Seligman, Arizona, and Needles, California, would like to catch up with the killer. Now, Jack lies buried near the tracks at Peach Springs. I like to think that he still hears the ground vibrate when a heavy freight struggles up the grade, and that in some faraway place beyond the Big Rock Candy Mountains, his eyes glisten with excitement as he dashes off to chase hoops or retrieve the newspapers each time a train whistled for the board. Yes. Oh, gosh. That makes me kind of want to sing the Big Rock Candy Mountain. Now, yeah, maybe we will at the end of this. We got a lot to go. Hey, this is KLLG, by the way, and you're riding on the Bipolar Express with Train Singer. We're hearing stories of rail dogs. Hey, another story comes from Tucson, from a Southern Pacific switchman named Tal Moorhead. It starts with a bitterly cold November day in 1941 when a hobo walked into the Epsy Yards and tried to sell a mongrel pup for half a dollar. The men were too busy to show any interest at the time, and so the tramp drifted on. Now, later, a car checker found the animal whimpering with cold outside the Park Avenue yard office and took her inside, and the gang promptly adopted her. And not only us, says Tal with a chuckle, but just about all the 600 men on the Tucson Division. At first, the little stranger was wobbly on her pins. We rustled up a box and bedding and a bottle of milk. Boy, that pup itty eat. And then she slept like she'd never wake up. Naming her was easy. She had three little white feet, so we christened her Boots. And in no time at all, she began learning tricks. For instance, when she sees a water can empty, she picks it up, carries it out to the nearest faucet, and drops it at the feet of the nearest switchman. She always gets a quick fill, too. Oh, yes. The gang chipped in to buy her a license and a collar. We didn't know what breed to put down, but we listed the owner as Tucson Yardmen. And the address, Park Avenue, Switch Shanty. Well, also, on the Southern Pacific, a man named Robert Rankin came across a canine hobo riding the rails with a tramp master in the summer of 35. The dog, a half-grown mongrel, could get in and out of doors of moving freight cars without a tumble. And when the hurricane decked, the tramp would seize his four-legged pal with his right hand and hold the animal against his chest, grab the ladder with his left, and start up. Boy, the dog would then climb too, paw over paw. He'd race along the top, skipping from car to car as expertly as any brakeman. And the hobo would leave his bedroll in a boxcar on a siding while he went out to forage for grub, and the dog, he's sitting guard. And speaking of agility, it reminds me of Little Hop, a white terrier born in Hills Park Roundhouse in Nashville, chats to Chattanooga and St. Louis at Atlanta, Georgia. The terrier got her name from the fact that she used the broad shoulders of Tom L. Couch, yard engineer, as a human ladder, leaping to the ground from the engine cab after their daily ride about 50 miles back and forth in the yards. Tom was immensely fond of that beast. Oh, wow. You know, he'd call her my girl. And he'd bring her tidbits every afternoon. He reported for work, and bathe her when she got dirty from playing in a coal pile with her two sisters. Now, each day, Little Hop would be waiting for the engineer. The instant she saw him striding around a curve, she would dart across the maze of tracks like a streak of white, fling herself into his arms. I heard about this dog from an ex-brakeman friend of mine, Herbert G. Monroe, and made a point of looking her up one afternoon in August 1943 when I happened to be in Atlanta. She was obviously expecting Engineer Couch at the time and barked loudly when I sought to make friends with her. A few weeks later, the terrier was gone. For years, Herb informed me, Little Hop roamed the yards, dodging engines and cars and riding the cab with Tom without being hurt. Then, like many seasoned railroaders before her have done, she took a chance and lost. That day when Tom came through the yard from his nearby home with food for his animal, Little Hop failed to keep her rendezvous. The hoggard was worried. He walked on toward the two-story brick building where engine men reported for their runs, and looking right and left for his pal, and occasionally whistling, calling, "Here, girl! Here, girl!" And at length, one of the men broke the news. "She's dead, Tom," he said. "Took a nap in the shade of an engine. Her neck lay across the rail, and when the holster moved the engine, well, we buried her in a special box in back of the call office." Oh, time for a little break here. Yes. On a summer day in the month of May, a burly little bum come hiking, traveling down that lonesome road, a looking for a liking, heading for a land that's far away, beside old Crystal Fountains. I see you all this coming fall in the Big Rock Candy Mountain. Big Rock Candy Mountain, you never change your socks. Little streams of alcohol come trickling down the rocks. Boxcars all are empty, railroad bulls are blind. There's a lake of stew, whiskey too. Paddle all around in a big canoe on the Big Rock Candy Mountain. Oh, the buzzing of the bees and the cigarette trees, soda water fountain, lemonade springs, and the bluebird sings on the Big Rock Candy Mountain. Row, row! where the farmer's dogs will have soft teeth and the hens lay scrambled eggs, oh. The warm sun shines and the fish all bite. You can sleep all day, oh. The big rock candy mountain, oh, you never change your socks.
Ooh, yes, oh.
The farmer's fields are filled with fruit and the cars all dead. What if I'm gonna stay where they sleep all day and they boil in oil, the inventor of Doyle and the big rock candy mountain. Oh, the buzzing of the bees and the peppermint trees on the soda water fountain. The lemonade springs and the bluebird sings on the big rock. Yeah, oh, the buzzing of the bees and the cigarette trees on the soda water fountain. Lemonade springs, the bluebird sings on the big rock candy mountain. Big rock candy mountain, on the big rock candy mountain. Yes, bums and dogs. You know, another, this is, by the way, this is you're riding the Bipolar Express with Train Singer, and we're talking about dogs, and this is on KLLG LP 97.9 FM, right up here in Willits. Hey, another Atlanta dog was Snooksy, a mongrel who attached herself to the noisy southern yards at the Georgian capital. Housed in a shed, she raised several litters of puppies and in 1942 made history by caring for a family of newborn kittens. Well, the mother cat had lost her ninth live in the yards, so Snooksy came upon the tiny helpless orphans, mew, mew, their heads off, and promptly adopted them, taking the kittens over to her shed one at a time. To feed them, she worked out a deal with a neighboring cafe owner. Twice a day, she scratched on his back door, received a bag of scraps, hauled it home, and had a railman unwrap it and laid it, her treasures, before the hungry kittens. In the landscape station grounds at Rome, Georgia, there was a monument of pink marble on which are sculptured the word Brownie and silhouettes of a dog and a railway signal set at clear with a footnote about 2 feet away, or footstone, excuse me. The mound surrounding by flowers is neatly kept. Almost everybody in town can tell you its history. From Dean Owens, a Rome lawyer, I learned that Brownie had been a frisky little quadruped who for 8 or 9 years seemed to regard himself as guardian of the depot. This dog was very friendly with railroad men, said Mr. Owens. And he discovered which trains carried the diners and which failed to meet them, and the dining car crew had a habit of feeding him. He knew they were all diners. Hey, H.P. Siegel of Atlanta recalls, when I went to Rome, general yardmaster on February 1st, 1940, I inherited the depot dog. That is 2 miles from the Rome station to the freight yard at Atlanta Junction, and I made several trips a day between those points. And very often, Brownie would ride with me in my car and follow me around through the yard. And finally, he was killed by another dog while defending the station. And at that time, a carpenter gang was engaged in remodeling the structure, and I had them build a casket for Brownie. We interred him in a little park adjoining the north end of the depot. Mr. Siegel ordered a marker from the local dealer, this being used as a footstone for the grave. The impressive headstone was donated by the Georgia Marble Company. Eunice, the yard master's 15-year-old daughter, who had been devoted to Brownie, unveiled the shaft. The affair on September 17, 1941, was combined with a public inspection of the renovated depot. A ladies' committee served refreshments. Both Yardmaster Siegel and Mr. Owens spoke at the unveiling. The latter was chosen to deliver the main address because he had handled so many court cases involving dogs and livestock killed by railroad trains that he referred to himself as a dog lawyer. In his eulogy, Mr. Owens quoted from Sir Walter Scott's novel, The Talisman, "Recollect that the Almighty, who gave the dog to be the companion of our pleasures and our toils, hath invested him with a nature noble and incapable of deceit.
Yes. Bow wow, Sir Walter.
Yeah. You know, at Ravenna, Nevada, an old brick from a locomotive marks the burial spot of Shep, who is said to have met all passenger trains that stopped at Ravenna over a period of 15 years. One snowy day in January 1943, when Shep was found dead in a field from the debilities of old age, he was given a railroad funeral. Station Master E.A. Bourne built a coffin. Section Foreman J.J. Signac dug a grave on the right of way, and Engineer M.L. Lukes and Switchman C.A. Hicks and L.P. Sunderland served as pallbearers, and Engine Foreman G.M. Swain donated the grave marker. A few days later, the president of the Burlington Lines, Ralph Budd, having heard of the incident, sent the station agent a framed copy of George C. Vest's famous Eulogy to the Dog, with this inscription: "In memory of Ravenna Shep, a true railroader, Shep, railroader who stayed on duty until the end."
Aw, pew pew.
Now, why Ravenna Shep met all those passenger trains with clock-like regularity, nobody seems to know. Maybe his reason was similar to that of Old Shep of Fort Benton, Montana. Now, Old Shep was a sheep herder's collie, and one day in the fall of 1936, his master went away for a hospital treatment and died without coming back. The collie saw him carried into a Great Northern train at Fort Benton. In time, the man's very name was forgotten, but Old Shep remembered. The, quote, loneliest dog stayed around the station, meeting every train day and night, plainly looking for his master to return. He refused to make friends with anybody and was seldom seen except at train time. After each train departed, he would crawl back under the depot to wait patiently for the next one. Pat McSweeney, the section foreman, took pity on the collie and tried to coax him to live at the station house, but the animal steadfastly refused to leave the spot where he had last seen his master. So the big-hearted King Snipe made a regular practice of taking food to the station and leaving it there for the dog. Station agent A.V. Shankey and the members of some train crew also helped to provide grub. Even the dining car staff knew about Old Shep's loyalty and saved choice leftovers for him. And again, Shankey invited the aging collie inside to the station, particularly in bad weather. But Old Shep would not be moved or coaxed. He continued to stay under the depot, haunting the platform only at train time. Perhaps in his hideout he was dreaming of happy days spent with his master and the sheep. Perhaps he was listening to the whistle of the next train. Well, in the flood-ridden spring of 1939, when Chinooks melted in the snow and swept away parts of the tracks and railroad bed, trains had to detour, and for 10 days none came near Benton. During that period, nobody saw the lonely dog, but after tracks had been repaired and service was resumed, Mr. Shankey stepped out on the platform and, although it was late at night, saw Old Shep watching the train. For 5.5 years, the collie kept his vigil, but his dark, wistful eyes had become dimmed, his ears muffled. Old Shep was no longer as agile as he had been in the long ago when he roamed the plateaus of Montana to round up the woolies. Finally, early in 1942, there came a day when old Shep feebly ran out to meet Great Northern Train number 235, miscalculated his distance, and was killed instantly by the engine. There were many sad hearts that day in Fort Benton and other towns along the line. 500 persons from that sparsely settled area turned out for the funeral, headed by two mayors, Richard Miller of Fort Benton, and Ed Shields of Great Falls. The latter, who supplied most of the information I have on Old Shep, is a retired Great Northern freight conductor. You can judge the character of the man from the fact that when he quit railroading, he took with him the old caboose in which he had ridden and worked for many thousands of miles, and parked it just outside his home in Great Falls, where you can see it today. Old Shep's funeral. At Old Shep's funeral, Boy Scouts served as guards of honor, while a local pastor delivered a simple eulogy. And I'm told there was scarcely a dry eye in the audience that stood silently on a hillock overlooking the station as the coffin body of Old Shep was lowered into the grave and a scout blew taps. Later, a marker was placed on that spot. Before we leave Montana, here's a story about President Roosevelt. Oh, yes, maybe he's the president that said, get a talk. Anyway, about President Roosevelt, that is not generally known. Now, in 1942, the chief executive was making a secret rail tour of the war plants. Hear that? And he had reached the Northern Pacific Depot at Billings in the Bonanza State. Apparently, without even the road's operating employees being aware of his proximity. At Billings, someone led a black Scottish Terrier off the train for a bit of exercise. Now, the animal was observed by E. Gordon Allison, the NP chief clerk there. Mr. Allison, who was a dog fancier by avocation, walked over to the visitor and read on his collar, "Fala, White House, Washington, D.C. Whew, that gave away the official secret, but only to one man. Excuse me. The chief clerk realized that if the wrong party should get wind of this train movement, there might be trouble. So he kept his mouth closed, and he did not hurry back. Oh, but he did hurry back into his office and bring out his own pet, Spot, a fox terrier, to make the acquaintance of the nation's first dog. Afterwards, he wrote to Mr. Roosevelt, suggesting that Fala's collar plate be kept concealed on confidential missions. And Stephen Early, the president's secretary, sent him an appreciative response. Hey, you're listening to Railroad Dogs, Rail Dogs on the Bipolar Express with me, the train singer, and we are on KLLG LP 97.9 FM, Willits, California. Okay, let's keep this up. There's so many, I know I won't get to finish them, but I'm going to go for it. Hope a little time to sing the last part of Boomer Jack and maybe even, I don't know, anyway. Plenty of rail dog stories have come out of the Second World War. Mostly stories about animals waiting, hopefully, for the return of owners engaged in military service. There was Jack, for instance, known as the lonesomest mutt in Hannibal, Missouri. Jack spent considerable time hanging around the Union Station and sniffing at travelers who seemed to bear a resemblance to Corporal Harry Uplinger. Railmen got used to seeing the creature and saved part of their lunches for him. Engineer F.W. Gleason of the Burlington Line noticed that Jack was wearing a license tag. He traced the master by that clue and got in touch with him. When Uplinger came home from training camp on a furlough, there was, wow, what a reunion between man and beast. Another dog, part chow, answered to the name of Blackie, followed a group of sailors into the Gulf. into the Gulf, Mobile, and Ohio Station at Trendley Avenue, East St. Louis, Illinois. And after mournfully watching them enter on a steamer, the Rebel, he decided to stick around, presumably till a certain tar came back to East Street, Louis. Blackie is no parasite, however. He earned his bed and board by helping assistant special agent Check to patrol the area at night and acting as a one-dog reception committee for incoming passengers in the daytime. A third service widower is Red, an Irish setter who was contented to live on a farm in Vonore, Tennessee, until three members of his household boarded a train at the Louisville and Nashville station in answer to Uncle Sam's draft call. The three are Operator M.F. Marshall and two sons, Section Foreman Louis K. Marshall and Louis Jr. and Kenneth. Red saw them off at the depot, of course, and then he must have responded out of the situation as follows. Now, what's the use of going back to the house when the boys aren't there? Well, why, it just isn't home anymore. So, he set up lyres and, penates, it's some old term for Gregory, and the train singer, as it were, in the Verona depot. And Agent T.M. Trift and the rest of the station personnel made him welcome. Someday, the townspeople will organize a parade for the homecoming Marshall boys. And when they do, no welcome will be more sincere than that given by the reddish-brown Irish setter, who will no doubt march proudly with them at the head of the procession. Oh, yes, that's when dogs rule. Wow. Hey, one dog was so miserably lonesome that he took his own life. Oh, my. I refer to Happy, the unhappy pet of William H. Truesdale, president of the Delaware, Lackawanna, and Western Railroad. This animal was left behind at the Truesdale residence in Greenwich, Connecticut, when the big chief sailed for Europe in the summer of 1905. Happy had spent so much of his life in rail travel with his owner that Mr. Truesdale, who partly understood canine loyalty, foresaw that the dog would probably hang around the Greenwich station. And he asked the New York, New Haven, and Hartford employees there to do what they could for the little creature. Sure enough, Happy did show up at the depot, and station agent Buck Walter, baggage master Holler, and Operation Sheridan tried to cheer him up, but the dog would not respond. He climbed into the signal tower and seemed to find a melancholy pleasure. Looking out the window at express trains thundering by. His big eyes would follow them with sad longing. He refused to eat, and he was pining away. Finally, on August 2, 1905, the deserted pet could stand it no longer. A Shoreline Limited came roaring down the main. However, Happy looked up to the tower as if to say goodbye, and then, according to two eyewitnesses, he deliberately walked in front of the train. His death was not an accident. Another Lackawanna mascot who met a tragic end was Jack the Bum. Now, Jack was lively, rollicking, and irresponsible. From earliest puphood, he climbed boxcar ladders, rode car tops and cabooses and engine cabs. He slept in train dispatchers' offices and chased boys and girls out of railroad yards. He established headquarters in Hampton, New Jersey, but ranged from Hoboken to Buffalo. And whenever the Hampton men got to missing him too much, an operator would flash a message along the line and then a train, a freight or passenger, made no difference, would bring the wayfarer back home. And for several carefree years, Jack the Bum rode the rails. Eventually, on April 19th, 1937, he returned to Hampton with buckshot wounds in his side. And like that other Jack at Peach Springs, Arizona, no amount of surgical skill could save him. The bum was interred beneath a flagpole on a hill overlooking Hampton Yards, and said Yardmaster Morgan, "Oh, we're burying the greatest little railroader in the world." The men standing near him nodded quietly. They were sort of choked up. Jack's only requiem was a blast from a freight locomotive storming through the yards. Woo, woo, woo. And I think that was all the requiem he would have wanted. E. Van Horn, an engineer man on Omaha Road, tells me that when he was a lad, in a small South Dakota town, he would go to the station to see the Chicago and Northwestern trains pull in. One day, I heard a dog yelping, he says. The sound seemed to come from inside the engine, and the hogger heard it, too, and he was oiling around, and he reached in to lubricate the links. He found a small bulldog hanging by the skin of his back to a cotter pin on the bottom of a link. The unfortunate creature had been swinging back and forth with a link motion. Boy, upon being released, it licked the engineer's hand and ran along the platform, evidently uninjured. Nobody could figure out how that animal got hung up. In a somewhat similar case occurred on July 4th, 1938. Fred Grieve, in the throttle of a Burlington locomotive, saw a short-haired dog on the track in Lewiston, Illinois. Oh, he was too close to the canine track walker to avoid hitting it. So he gave up the mutt for dead and kept on running till he reached Beardstown. Stopping there, Fred discovered to his amazement that the dog had been riding on the undercarriage of the engine and was bruised but not seriously injured. His pilot had struck the animal and, for a freak of fate, tossed it up into the mechanism. Roundhouse employees at Beardstown gathered around to marvel at the odd incident and accident. They decided that any living thing that could survive such a treatment would bring them good luck, and promptly adopted the dog as mascot. In fact, they named it Lucky. Oh, gosh, yes. Oh, my goodness gracious. Now, this incident recalls the case of a puppy that was hit by an engine and hurled into a pit at Cheyenne, Wyoming. And while the engineer was apologizing to the Union Pacific Station agent who owned the animal for having killed it, the dog popped up pretty much alive and bit the hogger's leg. For the next 15 years or so, much of the dog's leisure time was spent in sleeping between the rails that he earned. He earned the name Suicide. But when he died, it was from infirmities of old age, not from rolling wheels. Now, Gilbert Fournier, an old-time boomer now living in Vermont, tells me that in 1907, on the very day he made his first run, a 16-year-old conductor, as one, and on the self-same train, a spaniel named Jip was taking his last ride in an engine cab. Jip belonged to a conductor who worked out of Chisholm Yard, Maine, and on the road that is now part of the Maine Central. And at this time, he was snoozing peacefully, as was his custom. And on the fireman's seat box at the head of into the train number 18. About a mile from Chisholm Yard, a loud clattering and smashing under the cab was followed by a sudden grinding of brakes. Chip flew out of the cab window like an eagle, and after that, he could never be persuaded to ride any kind of engine, even a yard goat. You know, many stories are told of humane rail men who have rescued dogs. One is dated New Year's Day, 1936. A penny doubleheader was 7 minutes late pulling into Cambridge, Ohio, but instead of being rebuked for it, the crew were commended for, on three successive days, there had noticed a beagle, apparently dead, lying in the snow beside the tracks right away. But on the fourth day, January 1, the sharp-eyed fireman saw the dog's head move slightly. The train ground to a sudden stop. Five members of the crew waded through the snow to see what was wrong, and the beagle, his right hind leg caught in a wire fence, had been lying there helpless for at least 96 hours in the temperature that sank at night to 14 below zero. He was taken aboard. He was taken aboard the lead engine and carried to Cambridge. There, he was thawed out near a stove and was fed sandwiches and warm milk. And by the time the beagle was almost wagging his tail off to express his joy, it seems that the dog wanted to go railroading, but his owner, a farmer, he claimed him. Hey, we've been hearing stories of doggy woggies on the Bipolar Express. And I just, gee whiz, let me see. I'm looking forward to some of these songs. Some of these dogs are mentioned in Boomer Jack. Yes. Railroad dog. Oh, yes. Ooh. And a railroad cone. Let's just pick up here. One rare occasion, dogs have been known to save human life. Such was the case with Rags, who was blind in one eye, but winner of an Anti-Cruelty Society medal. Rags was a black and white terrier, the mascot of C and N&W switching crew on the Chicago River's north bank in the Windy City. One starlit night in 1936... when Rags was in a locomotive cab, I learned from Lewis M. Druk of Skokie, Illinois, he suddenly leaped out of the window 7 feet to the ground and barked so loudly that the hogs had stopped to investigate, and the dog was found standing guard over an unconscious figure of a man stretched across the tracks just a few feet from the engine. The award followed, and Rags was exhibited proudly at the Skokie Valley Kennel Club show in Chicago. But honors rested lightly on the black and white head of the terrier. He was glad to get back to his favorite haunt, the Dearborn Street Yard office, and resume his normal routine of riding engineer cabs. Well, I see we're getting late in the show, folks, and I do want to say that, I'm picking up something off the floor. Gregory, get up. Oh, hey, there's something about getting old here. So, I'm going to mention to you, I have an old cat, and I really would like a dog sometime, but one day, I'm going to have me a doggy. So anyway, we've gone to the dogs. Now, Boomer Jack, he's not the only dog to ride along the rails. All had names and they all had tails. There was Little Hop and Oni and Admiral Dewey, just a few of those American railroad dogs and the train folk that they knew. There was Roxy, Patty, Santa Fe, and Railroad Jack. All railroad dogs in the history of the track. But they say Boomer Jack traveled longer and covered far more ground than any American railroad dog who ever roamed around. I bet Boomer Jack ran out of steam in old Willits town. Train men came from miles and miles around, buried in the train yard, watched over by his friends. Boomer Jack lived a dog's life right up to the end. Boomer Jack got his head out the cab, his ears blowing back. Boomer Jack, woo! Clickety clack, he's a vagabond dog, that Boomer Jack. Yeah. vagabond, that boomer jack. Ow, ow. This is the train singer today on the Bipolar Express, and we definitely have gone to the dogs. Hey, I think I have enough time. Speaking of dogs, I gotta say, this is the only song I really know about dogs. I learned this when I was a little kid. Well, I had a dog and his name was Blue. Bet you $5 he a good dog too. I had a dog and his name was Blue. Bet you $5 he a good dog too. Yeah, Blue, he a good dog you. Woo! I toot my whistle and I blew my horn. Gonna find a possum in the new grown corn. Poor Blue barked and went to see. Cornered a possum up in a tree. Yeah, oh, oh Blue, you good old you. Possum climbed down on a swinging limb. Blue barked, possum growled at him. He grinned at me and I looked at him. I shook him out, Blue took him in. Yeah! I baked that possum good and brown. I laid them sweet potatoes round and round. Hey, Blue, what makes your eyes so red? I run them possums till I'm almost dead. Woo! Yeah. Blue, good dog you. When old Blue died, he died so hard. He shook the ground in my backyard. When Blue died, I laid him in the shade. I dug his grave with a silver spade. I lowered him down with a golden chain. On every link I called his name. There's only one thing that bothers my mind. Blue went to heaven, left me behind. Yeah, Blue. Well, I'm coming too. When I get to heaven, first thing I'll do, grab me a horn and blow for old Blue. And when I hear the blue bark, dog bark, Blue's treating my possum in Noah's Ark. Yeah. Yeah, Blue. You good dog, you. Hey! I had a dog, his name was Blue. It's $5, he's a good dog, too. I had me a dog, his name was Blue. I bet you $5, he's a good dog, too. Hey, this is Train Singer, and we've been hearing stories about railroad dogs, and there's a lot of other stories, too. So maybe someday down the line, we're going to sing and talk about more dogs on the train. Right now, this is Train Singer saying, be safe, be happy. Don't forget that love and peace, that part of it. Breathe it. Ah, love. Golly, wow, yeah. Yeah, maybe I've miscalculated my time here. Was it 206 or was it 216? Oh, gosh. I think I have. I maybe I have some time to do a little more story here. Oh gosh, this is my crazy day, I guess. Well, I gotta say, let's look at this. Wanna read some more? Yeah, why not? Loyalty is the dog's foremost characteristic. On the morning of October 7th, 1904, A Lehigh Valley passenger train was brought to a sudden stop near Delano, Pennsylvania, by a red flag at a curve. While the flag was slowly wig-wagging close to the railroad, and the engineer thought that some employee had come to grief and wasn't able to rise, possibly. A flagman who had fallen from some preceding train with the signal in his hand. Well, it seemed strange to the train crew, for they had no orders to meet another train at Delano. And coming ahead to investigate, they were amazed to see the red flag was being carried in the mouth of a small terrier. That only heightened the mystery. The engineer took the terrier into his cab and got underway again, traveling at a slow pace for a mile or two. And as the track was clear, why, the affair continued to be puzzling until they reached the next station. And there, the dog was recognized by the agent. He had belonged to an old track walker named Bernard Doherty. For 6 years, the terrier had followed his aged master on trips up and down the railroad tracks in blistering sun and driving blizzard. But on that particular morning, Doherty did not appear as usual. The tired track walker had gone to his last rest, but the dog didn't know it. At the regular hour for beginning the day's work, the terrier, true to his training, went to the shanty near the rails, took the red flag between his teeth, as his master had taught him to do, and started off alone down the track, evidently in the belief that Mr. Doherty was followed a short distance behind. All these stories go on and on. And Patty, as we mentioned in the Ballad of Boomer Jack, he was a mascot of a track gang on the Camas Prairie Railroad in Idaho. And the claim was made that no section worker knew his right-of-way better than Patty. And I'm inclined to believe it. This dog helped to patrol a 70-mile, 6-mile stretch between Lewiston and Stiles. And one day in 1917, when he was 10 years old, he found a small landslide covering the rails and hot-footed around the curve to where the boys were working. By persistent barking, he induced them to follow him and thus prevented what might have been a serious train wreck. And nor was that all. 4 years later, the animal discovered a boulder on the track and again brought help to the scene. Both train crew and passengers were safer when Patty was on the job. Oh, yes. Oh, and it reminds, oh, gee, I'm trying to get as much in as I can. Let me see. At least one engine I know of, the Kate Jackson on the Ohio and Mississippi, now the B&O, had a dog pictured on her tank, a full-sized bird dog retrieving a duck from a pond, vividly painted with oil colors and varnished. S.M. Huffman, a retired old boomer from Los Angeles, tells me that this was back in the 1880s, in the era of gaily decorated locomotives. He used to fire the Kate Jackson. He said she was trimmed with gold leaf, and not yellow paint, and with stripes on each slat of the pilot, or cowcatcher, around the sandbox and dome, and other great box head light. Mr. Huffman, he recalls that the boiler jacket of the Kate Jackson was a real Russian iron. I kept a piece of beef tallow wrapped in an old sock to grease the jacket in case of rain, he says. Occasionally, I would take a weak solution of lye and go over the jacket, rubbing it down with the kerosene until it shone like a mirror. Ooh, the men were proud of that engine and their dog picture. Huffman remembers the inside of the cab was a regular jewel box, and there was so much brass, and the boiler head was polished till you could see yourself in it. Oh, if you wanted to get into a fight with a fireman in those days, all you had to do was scratch a match on the boiler head of his engine. Well, the fireman blackened that smokestack and front end boiled oil and kept them as slick as glass. No speck of mud was allowed to mar a masterpiece such as the retriever with the duck. Yes. Oh, I'm just going to keep going. Gosh, this reminds me of a special train that was hired on October 24th, 1914, for a Pomeranian's funeral. The deceased was Betty Two, belonging to Herman M. Duray. millionaire manufacturer, and valued at $5,000. She passed away on the Duray estate in West Bury, Long Island, at the early age of 2.5 years. Mr. Duray chartered the train, onto which was coupled his own luxurious passenger private car. And in his rolling mansion lay the body of Betty Two, her long silken hair washed and combed and brushed with meticulous care, enclosed in a satin-lined coffin hermetically sealed. And as the engine bell tolled a dirge from the departed Pomeranian, the funeral cortege got underway. It sped westward via the Long Island Railroad to New York, and southward over Illinois Central Tracks to Hickory Valley, Tennessee, where Mr. Duray had another estate near Shiloh Military Park. And there the Pomeranian was interred in a grave adjoining that of a relative who had died some time before. Now, I wonder how many of the soldiers, having been killed on the battlefield of the First World War, at that time, received a more magnificent burial. Oh, gosh, yes. Well, you know, I've been going to the dogs for some time. And you know the best place to hear about dogs is on the... We've been talking about doggies and railroads, dead dogs, live dogs, on the Bipolar Express. I said the... yourself. Be happy.